The saying goes, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But what if you don't have access to fresh produce where you live? Or transportation to the doctor if that apple doesn't work? Or someone to watch your kids while you're at the doctor? Or, you get the point. A person's success in managing their health and wellness may depend much less on what happens inside of a doctor's office than what happens outside of it. There's plenty about where we are born, grow, live, and work, and how these circumstances are shaped by access to resources that influence the health we can achieve. There's a name for it: social determinants of health. So as a community, how might we begin to address these social determinants? How might we make progress towards reducing health disparities and improving health equity? How do we create a future where people receive support to stay well, rather than just treating them when they are sick? It starts with research. It starts with conversations. It starts with listening. It starts with understanding. Supporting people in their journey to good health is part of how we can create a better world. I'm Ellen Beckjord. Good Health, Better World is a show about how stronger communities begin with good health for everyone, even outside the doctor's office.
Hi, welcome. We're going to get your temperature taken. Is this your first shot or your second shot?
Are you going to use the right or the left arm?
Left arm.
Okay, that was good. My name's Heather. I'm a pharmacist who's going to give you your vaccine today. Okay.
I'm Rosemary. Nice to meet you.
Okay, nice.
I'm here getting a vaccine. Walked here from my home, five blocks away, so it was really convenient. And walked right into no waiting outside. I thought maybe we out waiting in the cold, and that was not the case. It was by appointment. Everything walked right in, nice and warm, very relaxing. Everybody knew their part, and having the QR code just kind of sped right through.
Just a little bit of a pinch.
Ow.
There you are.
Totally painless. Actually, doing really good. Totally painless.
Thank you. I'm glad that happened that way.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So just wait with us here for about 15 minutes. Talk to Jeff about scheduling your next appointment.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck.
My husband got his shot last week, and because he had to make a call to, he had made a follow-up call that wasn't returned until after he got his shot. So when they called him back after the shot, he asked about me, and he said, well, no, she could definitely get this because I do take care of, I'm a few months shy of 65, but I take care of elderly parents and who are in their 90s. So because of that reason, they allowed me to take the shot. I just think that it buys you back a more normal life. It's a shot. It feels like nothing. I didn't even feel a pinch, quite honestly. It felt like absolutely nothing. So I really would recommend it. I wouldn't understand why someone would not do it. I feel great. I feel fine. We all want to go out to dinner and go on vacation, and looking forward to that.
My name is Dr. Alfred Latrelli. I'm a doctor of pharmacy, and we're in the hustle and bustle of a very busy COVID clinic at UPMC Southside Outpatient Center. Up until recently, our focus has been really the non-UPMC healthcare workers. And this was pretty much the main site for doing that in the region. A lot of other sites that are scattered throughout Allegheny County really weren't vaccinating the non-employed healthcare community. So we saw a great opportunity to really service those that are going to then turn around and service others. So our theme was kind of taking care of the healthcare worker so that they can take care of our community at large. Now we're moving on towards the larger, broader community. We've been doing outreach to what we call these vaccine deserts, areas that really aren't penetrating with access to the vaccine. So partnering with a lot of different community leaders, we are able to bring members of the underserved community into Southside Hospital to give them earlier access to the vaccine. They're here, they're ready for it, you know, they want it now. You know, very, very different approach from a group of people that really just needed to connect with this resource. So for a person who's walking into the clinic, they're met with several pieces of safety requirements. One, they're screened upon entering the building. We ask them some screening questions, making sure that they haven't been exposed to anyone with COVID or tested positive with COVID or having any symptoms. We take their temperature and we have them sanitize their hands. From that point, you know, they're able to move into a queue where they're asked to maintain social distancing. before, you know, we start doing some of the more clinical screening. We have a first dose clinic and a second dose clinic. For the first dose clinic, we kind of have a different set of questions where it's the first time somebody's experienced the vaccine. So we want to make sure that we're providing them with any educational points that they might need to know. They go through, they receive their vaccine. They're usually pretty happy. A lot of people are taking selfies, like to do the thumbs up, get a picture with their vaccinator. And then they move on into observation, where if they've been somebody that's been screened and they cleared completely, it's about 15 minutes worth of watching. So we're very fortunate to have had a lot of moving experiences as we're vaccinating people. So we've heard people that have been in their house for 8 months, and this is the first that they've been out, and they can't believe that they're seeing people and that they might be able to take that breath and get back to some sort of lifestyle after that. We've seen plenty of people break into tears. We've seen plenty of people stand up and cheer. Everyone really responds, you know, pretty differently. This is a vaccine to really give them hope. So the theme of our facility is actually a shot of hope.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. June Lee to the Good Health, Better World podcast. Dr. Lee is the Chief Medical Officer at UPMC Health Plan, and he's joining us today to answer several questions related to COVID vaccination. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Lee.
Thanks for having me, Ellen. Glad to be here.
The first question is a pretty basic one. Can you tell us about the current state of the pandemic in terms of where things are with respect to rate of infection, hospitalizations, and death at this phase in the pandemic? Where are we and how does it compare to where we've been?
We are now a whole year and a little more into the pandemic. And for pretty much all of us in this country and in Western Pennsylvania specifically, March 13th was the date that we identified a year ago when the lockdown occurred and pandemic really came to us, although the infection rates were quite low. Since that time, we've had surges as they've been identified in terms of the rate of infection and illness, as well as unfortunately hospitalizations and death from COVID-19. The biggest in this region occurred in November and December, where the rates of infection as well as hospitalization throughout the region were alarmingly high. They're still too high, but the good news is that they're significantly lower.
A huge development is the availability of vaccines and vaccination. What vaccines are currently available and what vaccines may be on the horizon in the near term?
You know, vaccines against COVID-19 is one of the most important factors in terms of what's going to happen to us with this pandemic. The great news is that it's really a modern medical miracle that we have an effective vaccine or vaccines that we are actively distributing throughout the population only 1 year into a disease and virus that we were not aware of. Of course, it's not enough because we're still in the throes of a pandemic and we have not gotten rid of COVID-19. The good news, once again, is that in the United States, we currently have 3 different vaccines that are available and approved by the Federal Drug Administration under the Emergency Use Authorization. So it's important to know that this process, although speeded up and a little bit different than the usual authorization process and approval process of the FDA, does not mean that there were shortcuts taken, that it was done as efficiently as possible, and all of us feel confident with how the vaccines did come to the approval process and the safety and efficacy that has been demonstrated. So in December, 2 vaccines, they're identified mostly by the manufacturer. So one from Pfizer and second from Moderna were approved and distribution was started during that time. And the important thing to note is that both have similar mechanisms and similar disadvantage of having to be frozen at a lower temperature than what we're used to with, for example, the flu vaccine, but they're also extremely effective. Both need to be given in two doses, which is a logistical disadvantage, but they have been effectively distributed to a significant part of our population. Not enough, once again. The other good news is that a third vaccine manufactured by J&J as a company was approved several weeks ago and is currently under distribution. And the advantage of this vaccine is that a single dose is what is recommended, so logistically easier. It requires refrigeration, but not freezing. So once again, it's easier to distribute throughout the country, especially to rural areas where the availability of the handling process may not be quite as easy or readily available as they are in the major metropolitan areas. So all three of the vaccines are being actively distributed throughout the country and in our region through a variety of mechanisms that is being controlled by the combination of the federal government and the state government. Lastly, what I will say is that the three approved vaccines, they were studied under different circumstances. So there are some different numbers or percentages in terms of efficacy that's being floated around. But I think it's very important to understand that all of them are very, very effective. And I would argue super effective in terms of preventing severe illness that requires hospitalization or results in death. The prevention of those extremely unfortunate events from the COVID-19 is really exceeded all of our expectations. So when people ask me which vaccine should I choose, it's not so much that. I think it's important to get vaccinated as soon as it becomes available to you. And my recommendation and many medical professional recommendation is that the best vaccine is the one that is available to you. And I would encourage all of us to get vaccinated as quickly as it is available to you. The thing that we need to remember is that all of the approved vaccines are incredibly effective in terms of preventing hospitalizations and death, the most dire potential consequences of COVID-19. You should not go shopping for different levels or different brands of vaccines. It's more important to go ahead and get vaccinated by the vaccine that is available to you.
For employer groups of any size, employers who are trying to support their employees as we navigate this phase of the pandemic that is really marked by folks getting access to vaccination, how can employers support employees who want to get the vaccine?
I think one of the most important things in a situation like this, a pandemic and really a global and a national crisis, is making sure that there's a consistent flow of information. And unfortunately, there has been misinformation throughout the pandemic. So employers, as well as health systems, as well as insurers like us, one of the critical things that we can do is to have a consistent flow of information to our constituents that keeps everyone updated.
There's been discussion about vaccination as encouraged, in some cases as mandatory, and employers may be handling those considerations differently. Should the vaccine be mandatory? Or is this something that we should be thinking more about as strongly encouraging?
Yeah, so this is a complex debate, and it has been a debate that's been ongoing really for many vaccinations, right? If you think about the measles vaccination of our children, should children be allowed to go into school if they're not vaccinated? Or really most recently for healthcare systems about flu vaccination, should healthcare workers be required to be vaccinated as part of their employment because they're not just making a decision about themselves, but also how they can potentially impact patients and fellow healthcare workers. So similar equation does apply for the COVID vaccine. Having said that, I think most organizations, although I would say it's not universal, almost all the organizations have come to the conclusion that the COVID vaccine should be very strongly encouraged, but not mandated at this time. And that's certainly the decision that UPMC has reached. And hence, we want to offer the vaccination to all the healthcare workers and those in the organization, but not require them.
What about accommodations for receiving the vaccine and for recovering from any side effects that people may experience after vaccination? How might employers think about or approach that?
So that's an excellent question, Ellen, because it's a much more of a complex question because, once again, we're affecting our own health and our own safety, but those others because it's a transmissible disease. So, you know, with the vaccine, probably the biggest downside, especially with the two dose and the second dose, there are a significant number of people, but although it's not a majority, who have some side effects. And these side effects mostly include aches, pains, maybe some sleeplessness. Some of the folks who received the two dose of vaccine have even had some fevers and chills, and to the point that they would have difficulty working. So I think it is important as part of the encouragement to make sure we're covered. At UPMC, certainly those who are having the side effects are allowed to take those days off, and we protect our employees. I would say that the same is also true of the infection itself and the COVID-19 and those who require quarantine, right? Because we don't want to put our workers and other employers' workers in a situation where they're having to choose between quarantine and their livelihood. So it's as much as possible, and those are complex economic decisions, but many of the organizations like UPMC have taken the approach that if you need to be quarantined, that you would also be protected from an employment and pay standpoint.
So part of that encouraging folks to get vaccinated is to make sure that time is protected to make time to get the vaccine and then to recover if need be after vaccination. That's part of how we can encourage employees to get vaccinated.
Absolutely. So we have to protect the decision to be vaccinated.
Are there sources of information either at the federal or state or even healthcare system level that you think are especially helpful for employers to share with employees as vaccines continue to roll out more broadly? Are there some go-to sources that you would recommend?
Unfortunately, there's sometimes too much information and not consistent, reliable information. So I would encourage everyone, employers, general public, and even ourselves to have consistent sources of information that we can rely on. And certainly from my bias, the UPMC has made a significant effort to keep a COVID-19 page, both on the provider side as well as the insurance side, that keeps up to date available information in a very consistent manner. And that's vetted to make sure that it is what is available and factual, to weed out some of the you know, potential misinformation that's all too readily available in the current digital age. In addition, I do believe that the government sites are quite consistent and on the up-to-date information. So Pennsylvania Department of Health keeps an up-to-date information, which is reliable, as well as the CDC, which is the national organization, Centers for Disease Control, who is responsible for the public health efforts of the United States. And to me, if you rely on those sources of information, you can get consistent, up-to-date information and know that they've already been vetted.
I have one question about equity, one sort of about transitioning through this next phase of the pandemic, and then I always like to make sure the guest has a chance to say anything we didn't get to say. Okay. We know that COVID has disproportionately affected traditionally underserved communities and people of color. Can you talk about how we might think about approaching vaccination with a heavy emphasis on health equity?
Sure. Ellen, that's a very important question. Unfortunately, most crises tend to exacerbate the equities that are already, disparities that are already present in our society. And COVID-19 has not been an exception. It has been more devastating in the communities of color and poorer communities and economically disadvantaged communities. And unfortunately, with the vaccination effort, it has the possibility, obviously the book is still being written in terms of the vaccination rate, of exacerbating this even further. Because of way distribution of healthcare resources are in our country, it tends to get to the well-to-do before. So in order to, if you will, counterbalance this, we have to make special effort to get the vaccine to the sites, which is going to be more readily accessible, and to increase the education of the minority population so that it will be more accepted. You know, we should note that there are some even unfortunate special barriers that we need to recognize to try to overcome. One is that the current vaccines are very difficult to handle. The two that we talked about, the Moderna and the Pfizer, fortunately, J&J is easier to handle and it does not require freezing, but can just be transported through refrigeration like the flu vaccine. So that is more easily distributed. But because of the freezing requirements, the vaccine centers have been more centralized. And that tends to disadvantage the minority communities and some of the neighborhoods which are underserved. What that means is that organizations, both community organizations, the government, insurance, as well as providers who are providing the vaccination, need to make special efforts to counterbalance some of those barriers. And we should also note that the history of vaccination, if you will, and distrust for vaccination has very justified concerns among the minority community. You know, we have to go back to the relationship that Black community has had with some of the large medical complexes, the horrible tragedies and really unacceptable things that have happened with the Tuskegee experiment, which many know. And although many of us believe that that's ancient history, it really isn't. You know, many of the community, especially the senior community, the Black community, were certainly not only alive, but were adults when those Tuskegee, tragedies and were going on. So we have to understand that, and we have to make efforts to overcome the barriers that's caused by this distrust. It's going to require a different type of a public relations education campaign, and it's going to require efforts to get into the community. You know, UPMC has made a special effort to connect with the faith-based communities, as well as the community organizations around Pittsburgh, to try to make those connections more robust. It's going to take some innovative techniques, I believe, and innovative efforts for us to really make a difference. Otherwise, you know, we would be compounding the tragedy, right? Because it's a community that's been disproportionately affected already. And if in the end, vaccination rate is even lower, then we're compounding that by failing to protect them and prolonging the pandemic in that community compared to even other communities.
Sometimes we hear folks talk about wanting to wait and see how it goes when other people are vaccinated. Are you hopeful that hesitancy may decrease over time as more people know more people who get vaccinated?
Yeah. So the good news is that I can already see that happening, that as people see that folks are being vaccinated and doing well. And we must also remember that although the recommendation is that we still keep with the social distancing and the safety protocols after we get vaccinated, the reality is that we are safer, especially those of us who have elderly family members where we've had to limit the contact, or maybe the grandchildren didn't have any contact now for a year. All those things, if you will, take on a different safety level if we can get, you know, our elderly family members vaccinated. So it's important to remember the additional freedom that such vaccination can give. And I think as people see more of that, then the equation will continue to change.
What about children? What is the research around vaccination for children look like? Do we think vaccination for children is on the horizon? And how are we thinking about the risk profile, which has admittedly been much lower for younger people as it relates to COVID morbidity and mortality? But what about vaccination and children?
So that's a great question, Ellen. As you put it, on the horizon to me would be the right way to put it. So far, the large-scale vaccine trials have not been done on children, those under the age, specifically under the age of 16. So we have not recommended vaccination for children who are in that less than 16 at this point. The other part of the equation is that children tends to be less affected by COVID. Unfortunately, it's not a zero effect, right? If we said that if you're under age of 16, you're never going to be affected by COVID, then it would be an easy equation. But the reality is that there's still some children who get sick with COVID, and a very few, but who get quite sick. So what we expect is that eventually we will be vaccinating children, and the likelihood that the current vaccines are going to be safe and effective in children is very high, but the studies have not shown that. So I think that that will likely be the last phase of the vaccination. I wish I could say that COVID would disappear by then. If that happened, that would be great. But the children will be the last phase of the vaccination after the current high-risk adults and other adult population have been vaccinated.
Have a couple of questions about transitioning through this phase of the pandemic. One specific to the business community. What are the indicators that you'll be looking for as vaccination rolls out more broadly? Signs that the business community can look to feel like things are returning to something like business as usual?
The question you're asking, how do we assess that? What phase we are in? Will COVID-19 magically disappear? I think it's relatively unlikely that it will completely disappear. The most important parameter is the rate of infection in the community. That really determines our own safety. Hope is that as vaccination increases, as different phases, more and more people become immune, and we are continuing to practice, if you will, some of the practices that we know decrease the transmission, and the warm weather is likely to help, that the rate will decrease to such a point that it increases our freedom. So I like to really think of the post-pandemic phase, where we have the freedom to more easily do the things that are important in our lives, that is to go out, congregate and socialize with those folks that we want to socialize with, hug our family members, hug those that and have personal contact without worrying every day about the COVID. Will we still have to have some precautions? You know, that's likely. But the point is to get to a phase, what I'm calling the post-pandemic phase, where life allows us to enjoy many of the things that we're currently missing. I think many of us are quite optimistic that things will be much freer, certainly by the summer and the late spring. I think it's incorrect to think that it will be back to, quote, normal, if you will, of what we enjoyed 2 years ago, right? But we want the risk to get down to a degree where we don't have to worry about it with everything that we do, with all of our activities.
Can you talk a little bit about how you think about the pandemic affecting things at a very high level in that way and what you're hopeful about?
Yeah, I view the pandemic as fundamentally changing a lot of the paradigms of how we live, how we take care of folks in terms of how we view medical care. But I'm very optimistic. I don't think of all of that being negative. Certainly, do I miss many of the aspects that we've had to give up during the pandemic? Absolutely. I think all of us do. It's been an incredibly stressful time for really every person. But having said that, you know, it's allowed us to really look at the world in a different light. And I think we can get a lot of positive out of that. You know, the thing that we've ignored is, if you will, there's been almost no flu this year. We all knew how to prevent the flu, which are all the measures that we've been forced to take. We've just been unwilling to take it because even though the flu in any given year is expected to kill 40 to 60,000 Americans per year. We just chose to ignore that or deny that, that it was that much of a problem. So there are other things which I believe will be better. We're going to do a different equation. We're going to look at the ability to work from home differently. And I think the mixture of working from home, and I'm not saying everyone should be working from home because we need the social aspect of interacting with each other, but that mixture will be somewhat different. And how we look in terms of delivery of medical care at telemedicine will be different. We've broken the barrier, so we can integrate that better. And ultimately, I think we can create better delivery systems by mixing some of the lessons that we've learned, as well as some of the newer technology and newer aspects that we've become familiar with.
I appreciated your comment about how the pandemic has exacerbated existing health disparities, but I'm wondering if that's also a place where the way that those issues have really risen to a new level of awareness, certainly a level of awareness that they always deserved, but I think now have. Is that another way that we may be moving forward in a better way than we were previously with respect to addressing health disparities and improving health equity?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Look, the pandemic did not create health disparity. It exacerbated it. And it exposed it. And the exposure part is a good thing. We rarely fix things until we recognize it. And I think we are, as a society, and certainly as healthcare workers, healthcare delivery systems, as insurance companies, more aware of the impact of the impact of the disparity and the outcome of that. So it really is an opportunity, and it's upon us, and that's the royal us, right? Us as society, us as a company, us as healthcare deliverers, to really look at what are the ways that we can correct that? What are the ways we can counterbalance the disparity of vaccination? And then take those lessons and say, how can we apply that? Because the vaccination is not the only place where the hesitancy, the access to medical care, if you will, and how medical facilities communicate to the minority population is suboptimal. The same thing is happening in terms of drug adherence. The same thing is happening in terms of cardiovascular health. So it's really our opportunity to say, wow, this is unacceptable. It's really been unacceptable all along, but we've recognized it more and hopefully get over our own denials to say, let's invest. Let's change what we do so that we can have an impact on the disparity.
Dr. Lee, is there anything else you'd like to share with people listening about vaccination, about how employers can support their employees who are looking for information or access to vaccination, or anything at all that you'd like to share?
Really, my most important message is please consider vaccination. Yes, it's frustrating that not everyone can get it. But as soon as it becomes available to you as an individual, please consider and get vaccinated. It's important for you. It's important for your family. It's important for your work group and everyone that you associate with. It is not the single thing that's going to get us past the pandemic, but it is absolutely a critically important component of what we need to get past the pandemic to a freer life that we're missing.
Dr. Lee, thank you so much for spending time with us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast and sharing this critically important information about COVID-19 and vaccination.
For more information about COVID-19 and resources for employers, visit upmchealthplan.com/COVID-help.
Thank you for listening to Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan.